Hello and welcome to episode 19 of the Surviving Paralysis podcast. This is the triumphant return of Brandon Stevens.
Wow, it's been a minute. The A-team's back though, and you know, I feel like I've been gone for a while though.
Well, yeah, we didn't record basically.
Yeah, it's been a few weeks for me, but you know, I know that I'm kind of irreplaceable. No, I'm just joking. Now, I appreciate that, Kai. He always steps in and does an excellent job. And if he was here all the time, I'm sure he'd bump me right out of here.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Sometimes, you know, it's more fun. I think it's a more lively mood be when you're around.
Well, Kai has a lot of knowledge. He knows a lot of things.
Kai's kind of like, it's, you know, dad's home. Like, why are we joking around?
Yeah, we can't have any fun now.
Why are we joking around?
But he does bring a lot to the table, and, you know, he has a lot more expertise in certain areas than me. And so, you know, when it comes down to it, though, the mission remains the same. We are in it to find a cure for paralysis, man. And Kai is into that mission. I'm here for that mission. And, of course, Jeremy, you are too.
Right. We're just trying to find the complete package for me to be, or for me or whoever to be patient zero. So,
well, yeah, I mean, and I'm glad that you guys are really getting focused on that, the patient zero. And, you know, I would like it to be you, Jeremy, but if that's not the person, I think that in the end, I don't think you care either, as long as the direction and the goal remains the same. Do you know
exactly,
what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah. I'm all for it.
Because one thing that you're not really, and never have been, is a selfish person. And so.
Thanks, B.
Yeah, man.
It's all love.
It's all love on the Surviving Paralysis podcast.
Yeah, man. I mean, I want to walk again as soon as possible, but.
And you will.
And that, somebody else gets that opportunity first, I'm happy for them. Yeah, so.
For sure, man. I mean, that's what it's all about at the end of the day.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, man, you want to give us an update on your hamstring?
I know that the people have been so longing for that. Nah, it's really nothing to update. You know, I got my PRP injections going on about 4 weeks ago. And so basically I'm in that dead time where you're not really supposed to do anything.
So you get the injections and then you can't do anything.
Yeah,
for a while.
Like for the first 2 weeks, you're literally not supposed to do anything. 2 to 3 weeks, 14 to 21 days. And now that I've passed that, I'm starting to work in some isometric exercises back into that. And I have to say there's been a few days here where I felt really good. But I think I might have overworked them a little bit and they're starting to get sore, but we'll have to see, man. We'll have to see.
Yeah. No basketball for you, huh?
No, unfortunately it's not happening anytime soon, but I'm all right. I'm all right with being out 6 months if I can get back out there and do it again.
That's good, man.
What about you, man? What's up with you?
I'm good. Had a pretty productive week. We have a great interview lined up for everybody here.
I know that's big.
Yeah, I got a good one. This Dr. Lonnie Shea from the University of Michigan. I read an article. I think it was in the New York Post.
That's right.
Or the New York Times. I can't remember which one.
It
I'm pretty
sure
it was the Post. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's about a spinal cord, for lack of a better term, it's like. They think of it as the EpiPen for spinal cord injuries,
right.
Which can go a long way to, you know, the main focus is right now for people with new injuries, like immediately after you're injured to get, you know, like that's what they're working towards. They don't have it, you know, they haven't done it on humans yet, but they're getting great results from mice in the laboratory. And we're going to talk about that here in a little bit. And it's, yeah, I mean, it's a great interview with this guy. He was nice enough to, I saw the article on like Wednesday and I emailed him that day and he got back to me Thursday and we recorded an interview yesterday. So.
Nice. That's great, man. I love that these researchers, man, are really accessible and love to talk about what they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's great. Like some are, you know, I think some like universities or, you know, organizations, that are doing testing and things like that, sometimes they don't want to talk about it like while they're in the middle of it. But, you know, that's as soon as like articles usually come out, they're willing to hop on and, you know, give us their two cents about what they're doing, which is always appreciated.
Well, man, I know this is kind of outside of the box of, well, of SCI, but did you see that Elon Musk last night came out like out of nowhere and released his Neuralink?
We really need to talk before we go on these podcasts, because that's what my whole internet, whole Jeremy goes on the internet.
Okay, wait. Yeah. Rewind. Yeah. Okay. Well, what do you got on the radar this week, man, for Jeremy's news?
Well, first, man, I wanted to talk. We went, you know, we always talk about the Absolute Health Clinic and the Blue Light Therapy Room. I finally got a hold of them last week and had an appointment scheduled for Tuesday morning. I guess Tuesday morning, and that's when I recorded the interview with Dr. Lonnie Shea.
And I couldn't be there, man.
So, yeah, we apologize to the Absolute Health Clinic. We're not going to talk any more trash on the podcast about them.
No, they've been great.
So we're going to get in with them very soon.
Shout out to the Absolute Health Clinic.
Yeah, I was hoping that you could just go and
I wanted to. Fill in. I was stuck waiting for my furniture.
That's right. Yeah, Brandon moved in the last 2 weeks into his new
home. Yeah, everything that when you move, everything's in a window. So like when they say, "Oh, your internet guy, he'll be there on Tuesday, but it will be from the hours of 3 to 7."
Right.
So you're just stuck on house arrest until they come, which is probably going to be at 7.
Right.
You know, yeah. But you got to be there. So, yeah, that's why I couldn't be there.
No problem. We'll get in with them very soon, and we'll let all of you know about the Blue Light Therapy Room. I mean, I feel like this might change our lives. I don't even know. It's going to be
great, man. It's
supposed to be very healing.
Yeah.
So we'll see, man. We'll see. But yeah, Brandon, I know you always know I like to look at the internet.
Yeah.
And, anyway, I found, an article about Elon Musk's new company. Or it's not that new. I think he's had it for a while, but it's called Neuralink Corp.
Mm-hmm.
And,
dang, tell me more about that, Jeremy.
Yeah. They're developing a next generation brain computer interface.
That's right.
They've been working on this technology for the last couple of years or so, and they're putting together a submission to the FDA start testing the technology in humans.
That's right.
Their goal is to use the platform to treat spinal cord injury, blindness, and movement disorders.
Mm-hmm.
Their main focus right now is on patients with severe neurological conditions. But they eventually actually, Brandon, want to start using this as, like, so if you just want to be able to control shit with your brain.
That's right.
Basically, you're going to be able to get this as an elective surgery.
I was driving home last night, and I happened to see something on Twitter about this. And Elon Musk and his team at Neuralink just happened to be doing their... I don't know what you call it, announcement conference,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it was yesterday.
Well, I was listening to that, and, you know, people were fielding questions, man. And so basically I think, yeah, the nuts and bolts of it is you get a chip implanted in your brain, and then you can control a computer by just thinking.
Right.
Now, the question was posed, had this been done in animals,
and they said they've been doing it
so on... they said, because, well, Elon Musk essentially called it the monkey in the room instead of the elephant, because he's not really, first of all, he's like really not into animal testing, apparently he made that clear, but he also understands that the importance of it is to the overall betterment of the human race. And so what he did was basically he said that, yes, they have successfully implanted that in monkeys, and monkeys have successfully manipulated computers with their brain.
That's crazy.
So it's been done. Like, yeah. It's done.
Yeah. And I think they've done it on rats as well.
Yeah.
And
rats is one thing, man. And they were working with the, I think, like UC Berkeley, maybe UCLA, the doctors at UCLA.
I didn't see
the lab at UCLA for with the animals, the monkeys. So it was like a very, you know, I know there's a lot of people that aren't into animal testing, man. And so they wanted to make that very clear that it was a very controlled and like tried to really keep that in mind when doing it. But I mean, seriously, man, that's.
Yeah, I mean, it's huge, man. I mean, it said in the article that they're hoping to conduct their first safety study on 5 human patients in less than a year. But the president of the company said it could take years before the device could help, like, a wide range of people. So,
yeah, I mean
it's going to take some time.
Here's another thing, man, that this is a problem. Okay, so this can be super relatable, man. Here's the thing. What Elon Musk said is that the problem isn't going to be whether or not it works, because I think that he wouldn't come out with this type of announcement if he didn't believe that it could be done.
Right.
It's that how accessible is it going to be? Now, think about this. His main thing is like on a scale, if you want to scale it, it's not possible because there aren't enough neuroscientists that can implant, that can do the implant. He's like, there just aren't enough doctors.
Right.
Right. And so this makes me think about the other things. If that, like, this is why I wonder, man, like, okay, why doesn't, if we have a cure for AIDS, why doesn't everybody just get the shot? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or, and it, I think it becomes a scale issue. And also, I mean, obviously a monetary, like how much money can be made off of it. But in this case, I don't think that it's necessarily about the money with Elon Musk, as it would be that they're going to have to find a way, in his words, to have robots do it, because they don't actually have enough doctors or neuroscientists to be able to do this type of work that are capable of it.
Yeah, and it did mention in the article that they're coming out with this information, a lot of it too, attract new scientists to come work with them.
Yeah, so. Man. I mean, dude, if you have an interest in science as a youth, I mean, the future is the world is at your fingertips, man. Like, explore that. Encourage it if you're a parent, you know?
Well, yeah, and they said that they're, you know, the main studies they're working on now, they're the tests they're conducting, are the main ones are trying to monitor brain activity and then decode it so that they know, like, when this brainwave comes through, it's like you're trying to move your hand, or this brainwave comes through, you're trying to.
I don't want to go down the rabbit hole, as I frequently say on this podcast, but if Elon Musk is seeing something,
I'm in.
Yeah, but also what he knows beyond that,
right?
Do you know what I mean? Is probably
he's an alien, bro. Like,
maybe, man. Maybe. I'm not even, maybe he's trying to take us all with him.
Sign me up.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah, but the good thing about this too is that they described, like, the way that this thing works is that it's a tiny probe with nearly 3,100 electrodes laid out across about 100 flexible wires on threads that are each individually inserted and by a custom-made surgical robot, and the device can then monitor the activity of upwards of 1,000 neurons at a time.
Crazy.
According to the company, it's a sewing machine-like robot that can target very specific brain areas, helping to avoid major invasive surgery. So that's, you know, if they can just, like, if it's like a microsurgery tool type thing, that they can just, you don't have to get opened up. And because that's the thing with, like, the brain machine interface stuff they have now, it's like you have to have, they have dudes that, you know, in wheelchairs that have, like, like a plug sticking out of the back of their head, you know, which looks
like
insane.
Literally like a robot.
Yeah. It's just crazy, and you have to, like screw on. It's like a, you know, the male end of a screw on the top of their head, like a, for a, for a plug to attach to that then you can control your hand.
The brain is such a like a black hole of just unknown that I just want to know what these guys know about it. You know what I mean? It's just I really want it. They figured something out here. Do you know what I mean? About the brain that obviously we were missing before.
I agree, man. Yeah, it's just exciting. I mean,
that's exciting.
Yeah, it's you know, we just when Elon Musk is on the case.
Just gotta be patient. You gotta be patient. Yeah. And this is like, yeah, you're right, man. I mean, that has to feel like when you're like in the NBA and you got like Michael Jordan on your team. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
You're like, all right, we can do this. We can win this.
Yeah.
You know,
we need to get Elon Musk on the podcast. Yeah. Let's make that happen.
Why not? Why not us?
Yeah. Why not us? Anything's possible. So
we won't even ask him to smoke weed with us.
No, I mean, I don't think he's coming to my house, but if we can get
why
him
not
to,
us?
Yeah, if we can get him to call in even, I'd be super
he could probably
happy.
Dig a tunnel here very quickly.
Let's go, man. Like, I'd be happy for that, too. Anyway, so, well, yeah, let's get to Dr. Lonnie Shea, talk to him a little bit. You know, I talked to him yesterday just for a few minutes about what him and his team at the University of Michigan are working on. And, you know, it sounds like it definitely could go a long way toward preventing spinal cord injuries as opposed to, you know, getting somebody up and walking again that's had a long-term injury. But he did leave the door open for that as well. So, yeah, listen in. It's a great interview. We'll be back on the other side. Okay, so at the Surviving Paralysis podcast here, we're so pleased to welcome Dr. Lonnie Shea, who is a professor of biomedical engineering at the University of Michigan. Thank you so much, Lonnie, for coming on with us here. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, so, you know, the way I guess I found you was through an article, I believe in the New York Post, about, I guess, a so-called EpiPen for spinal cord injuries, which, it's a very interesting article, and I suggest any of our listeners go and look that up and read it. But can you explain a little bit, I guess, about what you and your team at the University of Michigan are doing?
Sure. So I'll start off with the analogy, because I think the title EpiPen for spinal cord injury was something I thought got a lot of attention just from the concept. And, you know, in allergic disease, people that have allergies will often overreact to something that's actually not terribly harmful. And so this is sort of like food allergies, peanut allergies, nut allergies. And the consequence of having this allergic response is your airways can constrict and sweating, rashes, and various things. And the treatment for it is an injection of epinephrine that really functions to sort of tamp down an overreactive immune system. And as in the area of spinal cord injury, there's effectively a similar situation going on where the trauma to the spinal cord is obviously a terrible thing to have. But at the same time, that trauma that creates an injury induces inflammation, and the not having any inflammation is bad, but also having excessive inflammation is also problematic. The excessive inflammation that is typically encountered following spinal cord injury can lead to the death of neurons. It can lead to demyelination of intact circuits, and it can also lead to sort of a scar that forms that can really be a barrier to regeneration down the road. And so we were looking to try to come up with a system that could essentially try to find that right level. We don't want to knock out the immune response, but we want to try to prevent it from being overactive. And we were looking for a strategy to sort of find that right balance. Many of your listeners probably know of this steroid methylprednisolone that has been used for treating spinal cord injury. And this drug, as you know, obviously steroids are widely used for modulating immune responses. But in the context of spinal cord injury, I'm not a physician, so my understanding is that these steroids have essentially an unfavorable risk-benefit ratio. They can do some good things, but then sort of the systemic-wide effects the steroids can do lead to an overall net negative. And so we were looking for an alternative that could allow us to sort of attenuate responses without necessarily having a pharmaceutical that could have actions everywhere. We were hoping to sort of have something that would be functioning more locally. And this is where we were working with these nanoparticles. And I'm very fortunate to have this great collaborative team with Eileen Anderson and Brian Cummings out at UC Irvine. And I work with a great group of students. And my collaborators at Irvine in particular have been working on sort of the immune responses in spinal cord injury. And so we really looked at the idea of how to design these nanoparticles such that after some sort of trauma, you're going to get this upregulation of immune cells that go into the bloodstream that then use the bloodstream as the pathway to essentially get to the spinal cord where the blood-brain barrier might be compromised or the spinal cord blood barrier could be compromised.
Right.
And for the nanoparticles that we're able to design it such that we deliver them into the bloodstream and they're able to interact with the immune cells in the circulation. And the first major effect that they have is that they actually limit the number of immune cells that go into the injury.
Oh.
And so that I think was a first major excitement for us, is to see that the number of immune cells went down. And then to our great surprise as well as gratification, is we saw that these immune cells actually had more of a regenerative phenotype when they went in there. So rather than the ones that did go there weren't inflammatory in nature, they were more anti-inflammatory in nature and could therefore help to set up a cascade of responses that ultimately led to greater regeneration after injury.
Okay.
And I think that the combination, we're generally referring to this idea of reprogramming these immune cells, and that you're sort of, the first step is redirecting many of them away from the spinal cord, but also the ones that go there are less inflammatory and more anti-inflammatory or regenerative in nature. And, you know, again, I think the added benefit is that we are really targeting these immune cells in the circulation. There wasn't in our hands any obvious signs of off-target effects as these particles are going to be taken up by these immune cells there, or they'd be taken up in the liver or in the spleen, and then they're just normally cleared. And there's no pharmaceutical agent in this to really stimulate the responses. It's all based off of the, you know, the physical chemical properties of the particles that seem to be achieving this reprogramming that I'm describing.
Okay. And so what, you know, I guess what is the kind of, I don't know, for lack of a better term, what is like the cocktail of nanoparticles that you are injecting at this point? And how did you come up with that?
So the particles that we're injecting are, it's the nice part about it is they're relatively simple. They're made out of the same material that biodegradable sutures are made out of. And so they are going to just fall apart over time. And so therefore, without any sort of lasting effects, as well as having sort of a history of being used in the clinic, the particles themselves are about 500 nanometers in size. And that size sort of helps it to target sort of the immune cells in general, one aspect of it to that size. The other aspect is the way we make the particles, they end up having sort of a negative charge on the surface. And the immune cells are normally looking for pathogens, many of which will have sugars or pieces of DNA on them that give them a negative charge. And so therefore we're sort of targeting those same sort of receptors that cells can have for targeting pathogens, so that we're actually getting the particles to these immune cells by both a sort of a charge as well as the size. And that's essentially the essence of the design of the particles, in terms of they then are able to be internalized by the immune cells and ultimately will degrade. But at the same time, in the time scale of degradation is going to be in the order of a couple of days in terms of their degradation profile. And that's why in the study, we actually had done daily injections of particles in this model. And I think that is the opportunity to sort of, continuously give the particles as long as they're needed, but then you could obviously, terminate them, and then the effect would actually begin to wear off as well.
Okay. And so what, what are you testing them on, like rats at this point, or what kind of testing is your team doing?
We did testing on mice.
On mice. And so okay. Can you elaborate on that a little bit and tell us a little bit about, the results that you were able to see?
Sure. So I'll give a little bit of detail about the model, just sort of to clarify what we saw. And so in our model, we actually go in and on one side of the spinal cord, we cut out a couple millimeter segment. Okay. And so that essentially is the injury and the trauma that we're causing. We then actually inserted this implant that we have, that we've been working on for many years, into this cavity that was created by the injury, okay. By the surgical resection. And the reason that we did this model is because we know anything that grows into this implant, that's an indication of how much regeneration there was.
Okay.
And so after doing this injury, we would then start daily injections of nanoparticles intravascularly or intravenously for these animals. And we did injections for 7 days. And so what we would see is we looked specifically at the implant that we put in, because that really marked where the injury was and where the defect was. And so we saw a lot fewer immune cells in that spot. Of the immune cells that are there, they expressed markers that were indicative of greater anti-inflammatory function rather than an inflammatory function. We saw many, many more axons growing in. We also saw more of those axons within this implant being myelinated. And then ultimately, we saw that the mice actually recovered substantially better. And their ability to, I know it's not a perfect endpoint in terms of using a mouse model, but their ability to move their hind limbs and essentially scoring their walking ability, there was a substantial enhancement of this ability for the mice that had particles relative to the mice that did not.
Okay, this is very exciting news, definitely for anybody suffering a spinal cord moving forward. I know that science is coming so far, but this seems like what you guys are working on there is pretty amazing. I wanted to know, so because this is basically, I don't know if this is a good description, but it seems like you're kind of altering the immune system's response to the spinal cord injury. Will this be effective in treating other diseases and other injury types?
We think it will be. There's definitely some history in terms of these particles between myself, a few other labs. And the idea is that, I think a challenge in a lot of these sort of inflammation in general is just sort of, it's just sort of a non-specific. There's not a specific target to try to change or alter. And so therefore you're having to have a strategy that targets inflammation very broadly and very generally. And so we think that as we go forward, that the spinal cord injury is a particularly compelling example where there's just sort of no opportunities or no interventions that are available. But it is a model, I think, for other instances where inflammation is not controlled in quite the way that you want, and that the particles could be a way of circumventing the progression of disease in that way. And so, for example, there's some work in sepsis where the immune system responding to certain pathogens continues to progress and can have life-threatening consequences that, again, the non-specific nature of these responses, potentially the particles could be used to attenuate or modulate those responses such that the normal healing or normal processes can take over and lead to sort of a healthy outcome.
Okay, I understand. And so again, we're talking to Dr. Lonnie Shea, who's a biomedical engineering professor at the University of Michigan. And we're talking about him and his team's new study. I guess that's probably not very new, but it's just been reported on where they're doing some incredible things for spinal cord injuries. And Dr. Shea, I wanted to find out, obviously I'm a C4-5 quadriplegic and I've been injured for about 21 years now. And so this isn't something that you and the team think is going to be able to do anything for people with long-standing injuries. This is more of something that just like immediately after an injury, you can eventually you'll be able to hopefully get this, you know, nanoparticle injection and it will quell some of the damage to the spinal cord immediately. Is that right?
Yeah, I think as we envision it right now, this initial trauma is sort of the greatest opportunity to try to intervene. And we're, you know, hopeful that in some way this research could lead, you know, down the road to an EMT maybe being able to deliver these nanoparticles or having it available in the emergency room such that if an IV is given, they could be delivered through the IV in some way. And the only hesitation that I have in my response is I think this is the most obvious way, but as the therapies for addressing sort of chronic spinal cord injury continue to progress, I wouldn't want to rule out the opportunity that the nanoparticles might have. The idea of going in and I know in certain clinical trials that certain people are going in and trying to remove scar tissue and such. And, you know, if interventions like that are being used, the nanoparticles might reemerge as an opportunity to try to control the response in conjunction with some other therapies as well. So, but you said it correctly. The greatest opportunity, I think, is for newly injured patients. At the same time, I don't want to rule out too much just because it is, I believe, sort of a novel way of sort of intervening in inflammatory responses that it's just hard to know where it might go.
Okay, yeah, that's understandable. So what, I guess, in conclusion here, what is next for you and the research team, and where do you guys go next as far as more trials or what, more testing on animals, or what's next for you guys?
Well, I think that there are a couple of different directions that we're thinking of. And so one, I think that we are looking into the particles and their design and want to understand, you know, can we do even better? That I mentioned how there's a reduction in the immune cells that are coming in and, you know, they're sort of more regenerative in nature, but, you know, what's that right balance? Do we actually want a few more cells going in and with them being more regenerative in nature, and would that be better? And so I think that there's some questions like that we think we can potentially address that are definitely on the research side towards making an even a more potent particle. At the same time, I think that we are very much interested in trying to partner with the right groups to see about how we could get this into a clinical trial. An opportunity that I'm hopeful can happen is that the results will sort of spur some of these conversations in terms of how to get these particles through regulatory approval, how to get these particles in a way that essentially a company would be interested in sort of being able to move them forward through the whole process. And I know that there are many challenges with that, but I'm also fortunate that being at the University of Michigan, we have this really fantastic institute on critical care here that's interested in challenges that are exactly like this. And so, again, I think the idea is trying to partner with the clinicians and hopefully bring in industry at the right balance to be able to move this forward and to the benefit of patients, hopefully.
Well, that's fantastic, Dr. Shea. I on behalf of the spinal cord injury community, definitely salute you and your team for all of your hard work. And, we look forward to hearing more exciting news from you guys down the road.
Well, we're going to keep at it, but I thank you so much for hosting me and for having this podcast in general. And I hope to be able to come back at some point and report back on even better progress at some point.
I look forward to it, Dr. Shea. Thank you so much.
All right, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yep. Talk to you soon. Thanks.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
All right. Well, my thanks again to Dr. Shea for getting on the podcast with us. I know you haven't heard that yet, B, but you'll definitely have to listen back to it. It was an outstanding interview, and it's definitely, I think could be a good tool in the whole thing that we're working on here.
Yeah, that's a positive step in the right direction, because here's the thing, preventing future spinal cord injuries or becoming paralyzed could be a huge factor, because I mean, here we're talking about the buildup and not having enough enough people to scale on scale, because what the amount of spinal cord injuries per year is, like, I mean, I think the number was in the article. Do you have that?
I think it was 12,000 in the US.
Okay, so if we can prevent
half of those,
then at least in the future, when we do find this cure, scaling that, it's not going to keep building. The numbers can go down.
Right.
We need the numbers to go down.
Absolutely.
So that's awesome, man. And I think it's another part of what we've talked about a lot on here is the inflammation factor.
Yeah.
And in our overall health in general, it just seems to always be like every time we talk about a condition, it's like our bodies react to them, are not able to heal themselves when they're in a state of inflammation.
Right.
So.
I mean, it's going to go a long way. And like he said that, you haven't heard it yet, but when he talks a little bit in the interview about, because I asked him that question exactly, if this is only going to be something that's beneficial for people with new injuries as opposed to, people with long-term paralysis. And he said he wouldn't, as microsurgery tools get better, he wouldn't put it past, if you can get something to go in and clean up the scar
that's
tissue,
right, yeah,
that they could inject this, this cocktail that they have.
Yeah, because that's all that's protecting the injury is scar tissue.
Right, and so you open it back up with, you clean up the scar tissue and inject this
and it has to be so precise,
right.
We're talking less than a millimeter, know what I mean, of scar tissue. Well, if we can clear that off and then essentially put the injury back into its like infant stages,
right,
then it's kind of on a much smaller scale, similar to like if you just injure a tendon or a ligament and you just like scraping off the fascia off the muscles, right?
Right.
And then that allows the blood to recirculate back to the injury.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is the thing with this, with what Dr. Shea and his team at Michigan are working on. It's that, you know, the immune response to a spinal cord injury, to any injury where the blood-brain interface is broken, you know, like that sheathing around the spinal cord and the brain, then, you know, even getting, you know, immune cell response to that area is the body thinks it's helping, but it's actually hurting it.
Well, that's another inflammation
thing. And causing, scar tissue to form and that sort of thing. So,
well, that's another thing we haven't touched on a whole lot in regards to spinal cord injuries themselves is the immune system.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And that was actually the most interesting aspect of what they were doing, is tackling the immune system's ability to fight off. Like, I don't really know enough about our bodies to have thought that our immune system plays a big part in the healing of such a serious injury.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I thought your body's ability to just heal itself came from its innate ability, not its immune system.
Right. Yeah, I know. And so, yeah, I mean, it's all these pieces are going to start, you know, coming together. Cause I feel like this is definitely something we could add in to
things
that we're already, absolutely, that we've already found, as well, you know.
And in fact, this one seems to be by far one of the most, I don't want to say important, but, you know, if you're, I really feel like that could be, when you talk about patient zero could be anybody.
Right.
With this type of thing. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
It doesn't need a certain
level or
characteristic. Yeah. Right. You know what I mean? As long as you can access the point of injury, whether it's through a microsurgery or just sticking it in there, then I don't see why not.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't seem like a bad idea. That's all I can say. I'm super excited about it though.
Yeah.
And
thanks for getting those guys on here. And
yeah,
man, that was
so,
I mean,
nice,
the University of Michigan, it's a very large institution. These guys are, you know, this is their life.
Yeah. I mean, and they're in it to win it. Yeah. So it's good to know. And he was, you know, at the end of the interview, he told me, yeah, hopefully I can come back on with some better, you know, some great news soon.
Some breakthroughs.
So
that'd be great.
Yeah,
we'll have to make sure we follow up in
we definitely will.
6 or 8 months and see how things are coming along. See if they've had any new breakthroughs.
Yeah, I mean, they're he's just a great guy, and I definitely appreciate him helping us out and getting on the podcast. So we will wrap this up. I know it's a little shorter. We don't have Kai on here to talk. Kai's always like, wait, one more thing.
Well,
Wait, like I said,
he's got a lot of information.
He does,
man. Probably sit on here for 2 hours, but we like to keep it short and sweet.
We could rock it out for hours, with Kai. Anyway, so we will be back next week. Talk to you all soon. Let us, go back, listen to one more thing.
Yeah.
As Kai Bukalagard would say. Go back, listen to old episodes if you haven't listened to them yet. We get credit for every, not credit, but... It goes a long way. It helps every listen we get. You know, we get, it adds to our stats, and hopefully somebody will see this podcast.
It's just progress towards a cure, man.
We want more people to hear it. We want, the better our ratings are, the more
people
show up on iTunes and all that stuff on their rating system. And like the podcast, 5 stars only, please, unless you really don't like us, but just email us if that's the case. Hope you all have a great week, and we'll talk to you soon.